We know, for example, that blood will rapidly degrade hydrogen peroxide, and therefore masks soiled with blood should not undergo disinfection or decontamination with a hydrogen peroxide-based system. Because there is no recommended methods for cleaning these FFR respirators, such as an N95 prior to processing, it just makes sense that visibly soiled N95s should be discarded and not be reprocessed.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes, leaders, and innovators who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
On this COVID-19 bonus episode of Beyond Clean, we speak with Janet Proust, Global Standards Director for 3M Medical Solutions Division. Janet has over 30 years of healthcare and industrial sterilization industry experience and also clinical practice experience prior to 3M. She presents CE courses globally on topics related to sterilization and infection prevention. Janet graduated from the University of Minnesota and has obtained several healthcare-related certifications, including CRCST. She is an active member of AAMI and sits on the AAMI Board of Directors. She participates on multiple other AAMI committees, including those that authored ST-79, ST-58, ST-91, and is an associate or industry member of ISHM, AAMI, ASTM, APIC, EOSA, SGNA, and AORN. So Janet is definitely bringing the accolades and a deep involvement in the industry, Bob. She's an expert, and we're going to talk with her about N95 respirators today. It's been a hot topic in the industry. You've done a webinar recently on reprocessing these and decontaminating the masks, and PPE is really, for 6 weeks, been one of the most talked about topics in our industry.
Yeah, for sure, Justin. I can't wait to hear Janet. We literally could not have picked someone better to speak on this topic, so I'm super excited to hear what she has to say about it.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWashCheck test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Janet Proust, Global Standards Director for 3M Medical Solutions Division. And Janet, this is a COVID-19 impact bonus episode here on Beyond Clean. We've had a few of these. They're very timely and very topical for our listening audience out there in the industry. We're going to talk about N95 respirators and when and why are they needed in the healthcare setting, among other topics. So thank you so much for joining us and getting this very important information out to our audience today.
Thank you, Justin, for inviting me. I'm pleased to be here to share information with the audience.
So let's just start with kind of the way I teed it up, but when and why are N95 respirators needed in the healthcare setting? Because I can tell you, Bob's even done a couple of webinars on this, and we've heard a lot of discussion about it. There's a huge debate about whether or not SPD technicians need to be wearing them in all situations or not, and obviously just a big focus in the industry. So I'm glad you can come on and talk to us and help clear the air, so to speak.
You know, the topic of respirators and use in healthcare settings certainly is a very sought-after topic. Now we're seeing lots of webinars and communications on this topic, so we're really happy to be able to share information on this. When fitted and used correctly, N95 respirators help reduce wearers' exposures to airborne particulate hazards, and those include both bioaerosols and non-biological aerosols. Respirators contain a filter media, and that media is designed in a certain way so that it allows the seal around the wearer's face so that the air passes through that filter and instead of around the edges before it's inhaled by the person who's wearing that respirator. And in many industries, including healthcare, a common choice for the type of respirator is what's known as a disposable filtering facepiece respirator, or also known by the acronym FFR.
So probably one of the biggest questions that comes up regularly, especially if you're on social media and you're kind of following the sterile processing groups, you know, that this is very much different than what they're used to dealing with. And I think that by far the most common question that comes up, especially when you're dealing with a device that is almost universally regarded in any other circumstance to be a single-use device, that question is, what is decontamination look like when you're talking about one of these things?
So as you probably are aware, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or what we know as the CDC, has published lots of guidance on managing respirators during pandemics, including the one that we're in right now. And some of their guidance includes information about extended use and also reuse of respirators. So those documents are the very first thing that healthcare facilities should be looking at. They have recommendations following all of the applicable instructions for decontamination, and we have some references that are available that perhaps you can post on your website for the audience. 3M has been looking at ways to assess decontamination of these FFR respirators for many years. We believe that there are at least four key aspects for successful decontamination of respirators. And most of the studies and publications and kind of programs that you see don't always take into account all four of those things. We believe that any method has to be effective at inactivating the target organism, such as the virus that causes COVID-19. It also should not damage the respirator's filtration. It shouldn't affect the respirator's fit. And it needs to be safe for the person wearing that respirator so that after that decontamination process, that there isn't any off-gassing of chemicals that could potentially go into the wearer's breathing zone. If the filtration is damaged or the respirator does not fit, it will not help to reduce the exposure to those airborne particles or contaminants. 3M has been working with several major healthcare low-temperature sterilization and decontamination equipment manufacturers, including manufacturers of chemical disinfectants. And our approach is we rely upon that system manufacturer to confirm the efficacy or microbial efficacy of that method. Is it effective of killing that target organism? and also to provide information on any potential hazards to the respirator user. So the last thing I talked about, be safe for the person wearing that respirator. The manufacturer of that system needs to provide that information. What 3M does is we evaluate the effect of that decontamination system on the filtration efficiency, on the fit, and the integrity of the 3M respirators that we test.
That's great information, Janet. With the decontamination piece, can you speak to the issue of cellulose as a complicating factor when determining which process to use in decontamination?
So in addition to the guidelines and recommendations coming out from CDC, I'm sure your audience is well aware that FDA has issued several documents as well, and one of those is known as the FDA Emergency Use Authorization, or EUA, for reprocessing of filtering facepiece respirators. And according to FDA, in their EUA document, they say the decontamination system manufacturer that makes that request for the EUA of an N95 needs to include information of any mask materials that they know might be incompatible with that method for reprocessing. And specifically, for example, cellulose-based materials we know are incompatible with hydrogen peroxide because the hydrogen peroxide gets absorbed by cellulose. So that means that N95 respirators containing cellulose may not be compatible with some of the systems. And again, the reference back to that decontamination system manufacturer is where you find that information. Several models of our 3M respirators do contain cellulose. We have a detailed list in a letter. We call it a cellulose certification letter. And a few of those models that now are being used in healthcare that contain cellulose include our 1804 and 1804S. The name of that is a V-Flex healthcare particulate respirator and surgical mask. And then there's also another product, the 9105 and 9105S. S, by the way, just stands for the small size, the V-Flex particulate respirator. So both of those do contain some cellulose, and that would be something that could potentially be not compatible with hydrogen peroxide-based systems.
Wow, that's great information. So here comes the million-dollar question. When thinking about these masks, and we've all heard this our entire career in sterile processing, that if a device is not clean, it cannot be decontaminated or sterilized or processed via high-level disinfection. So is there such a thing as cleaning a mask prior to reprocessing it? And if not, what steps should lead up to the reprocessing of these masks?
Yes, I agree. That is a common question, and it is very confusing. FDA has some information regarding that, and in their emergency use authorization for the reprocessing of these FFR respirators, they state, again, that the manufacturer of that reprocessing system should provide the evidence that shows that either they can be removed or that they don't interfere with that bioburden reduction, disinfection, decontamination process. So that simply saying the manufacturer of that system would have had to have done testing to show, okay, they can be soiled and the system still is effective, or that it doesn't interfere in some way. This information is really important, right? Because it may limit the ability of that mask contaminated with certain types of soils to undergo that specific process and result in an effective process. We know, for example, that blood will rapidly degrade hydrogen peroxide, and therefore masks soiled with blood should not undergo disinfection or decontamination with a hydrogen peroxide-based system. Because there is no recommended methods for cleaning these FFR respirators, such as an N95 prior to processing, it just makes sense that visibly soiled N95s should be discarded and not be reprocessed. To address the second half of your question, though, related to what are some of the steps leading up to decontamination, the FDA also provides recommendations related to what's now being referred to as the chain of custody and what that does, and other information to safeguard against some inadvertent exposures. This is explained in detail in yet another FDA document that's entitled Enforcement Policy for Face Masks and Respirators During the Coronavirus Disease Public Health Emergency, and it's guidance actually for industry and food and FDA and administrative staff. That term chain of custody is sort of new within our reprocessing area. We haven't really had to deal with that before. The term chain of custody means that that decontaminated respirator should only be used by the same person each time after it was decontaminated. So the facility has to set up a method to establish a way to identify that respirator and ensure that it gets back to that initial person who used it each and every time after it's reprocessed. There's also some other important information that facilities need to think about and also provide the right information to the frontline decontamination staff. And these include details or a policy specifically about that chain of custody. How are you going to do it? How are you going to ensure that the used respirators from the point of use by that initial person through collection and transport and within the healthcare facility or maybe even from outside the healthcare facility to that reprocessing or decontamination location through the cycle, packaging after processing, and the distribution back to that healthcare professional that wore it before has to be described, has to be in a policy, and your staff have to be trained of what that process is. There's some other things to think about, too. You know, what is the required PPE for staff that is actually doing that decontamination? Another very common question that we hear on some of the programs that are available. AORN's been pretty clear that N95s are not required for this decontamination activity, but that's our standard precautions. PPE is acceptable. We know that respiratory protection is needed when aerosols are generated, and by following our normal processes within the sterile processing CSSD department, aerosols should not be generated. Is COVID-19 screening for staff needed? That's up to the facility, and occupational health policy is really what should be consulted to answer that question. Procedures and identification to separate the contaminated from decontaminated, procedures required for marking and tracking, methods for identifying who that respirator belongs to, and also the FDA recommends that facilities should clearly state that the respirator has been decontaminated and vice versa, be able to identify those that are still contaminated and need to go through the process, identify how many times the mask has been decontaminated, advise users to discard respirators that are visibly soiled or damaged or seem to fit poorly because we won't reprocess those, and then to identify those types of materials that are incompatible with the proposed process. So lots to think about in initially setting up what is that procedure and policy to reprocess respirators.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're talking about an entirely new process in a lot of cases. And so there's a lot that has to be considered in all of this. And when you're talking about things like chain of custody and how this has not been something that anybody has really ever talked about before, and having a process that requires a single mask to go back to the same person, when oftentimes our processes cause us to have troubles just getting a single device back to the right department, that's a real struggle. And so this can be a real challenge to create a whole new process focused around so many parameters that are required. This is coming at a time where a lot of people have a lot of stress upon them. So something that's come up repeatedly, and I feel like we've done a pretty good job of kind of bringing this to the forefront. We had a webinar about this exact issue, and it was very popular. There were a lot of people who wanted to know the answers around this, and that's specific to the chemical exposure and safety that's related to these reprocessed masks.
Good question, Mike, and a really important topic to educate everyone on, no question about that. When choosing a decontamination system, the FDA recommends that evidence should be generated and then provided by that system manufacturer that demonstrates that if there's any residues remaining on that decontaminated respirators, that they basically are insignificant to cause a health hazard or have an effect on the user. So back as normal, you know, the manufacturer of those systems needs to have completed that testing, and that's actually a requirement from FDA for submitting that EUA is to provide that safety information. So the user needs to go back and seek information from that processing equipment manufacturer on this question. Now, don't forget, there's lots of documents, lots of information, existing documents of what are those exposure limits for chemical sterilants and high-level disinfectants. Those are included in ANSI/AMI ST58, which is chemical sterilants and high-level disinfectants in healthcare settings. There's annexes on every type of chemical, including hydrogen peroxide, in the back of that document that provides really good references and information. And then also there's AMI-TIR-67, not quite so well known, but the title of that one is Promoting Safe Work Practices Pertaining to the Use of Sterilant and Disinfectant Chemicals in Healthcare Facilities. And that one specifically goes through the details of what the employer, So whether it's the users or the reprocessing staff, what the employer is responsible for understanding what are those safe levels of residuals and what would be that impact and what sort of criteria do they need to put in place in order to make sure that it's safe for the both the staff reprocessing and then the users of those potentially exposed to those chemicals. Both of these documents, however, are referencing current OSHA and other organizations' established limits for exposure.
Okay. So I'm a supervisor or a manager or a director in a healthcare facility, and my leadership comes to me and says, we want to start doing this today. What are some of the factors that I should consider with the decontamination of these masks?
Well, luckily, we have some pretty good established procedures in order to be able to answer tough questions like this. AORN and now also ISHM recommend that facilities conduct that multidisciplinary risk assessment to help determine what's the best approach based on the facility needs. So those would include things, what sort of resources are available, what systems do you have, which of those have the appropriate regulatory clearance, what sort of staff do you have, how many of these respirators do you need to reprocess, and what is that timing? So all of those can be factored into that risk assessment to determine what could be that right approach. The AORN COVID-19 toolkit provides really nice up-to-date information, and I believe is a very useful resource. So if your listeners are not aware of that or looked at that toolkit, I would recommend that you do that. On that site is a link specifically to their risk assessment tool to help make it easier to do, and that process might be a good approach to assess the key factors. Now, some of these key factors need to talk about. What are your resources and what are going to be your needs? An assessment of what's out there in the published literature, because this has all happened very quickly. There are some recommendations, but it's not like the typical standards and guidelines that we have available normally for the processes that we do. FDA, CDC, and other governmental recommendations are really kind of the key go-to resources right now. There are other published methods, and more facilities are sharing what they're doing. And so those are also information that should be sought after and could feed into that risk assessment. And then there's new information that's coming out nearly every day and new programs. And I encourage the listeners to try to listen in and participate in as many of these as you can to help build your knowledge base and also determine what is that right approach for your own facility.
Janet, excellent interview, and you're absolutely right. As we're closing, you're mentioning the fact that the situation really is somewhat fluid, and there is constantly new information that's coming out. So there's never been a better time to really be engaged in your continuous learning efforts. And so I will just echo that. And I will also say that there are lots of webinars going on because people are not necessarily out and about, and the online content that is not only being generated, but that is available just to help stay educated during this time is everywhere. We're glad that Beyond Clean can be a part of that. And we're really honored to have you on today to talk about the N95 respirators. So, Janet, great job. Thanks for coming on.
Well, again, thank you, Beyond Clean, for the invitation, and thanks for everyone for listening.
That was Janet Proust, Global Standards Director for 3M Medical Solutions Division. And Mike, I will tell you, this has been a hot topic of conversation. I don't think I need to tell anybody that. We've done some webinars. I know Bob did one on chemical monitoring in this scenario. You know, we talked with Janet about off-gassing, but really, there's a whole critical thinking piece to this. And I do want to emphasize the fact that the word is decontamination. There's a great deal of confusion around the fact that we're using a low temp sterilization process. And then everybody says, well, wait, if it's not clean, it can't be sterile. I just want to tell everybody that's correct. If it's not clean, it can't be sterile. We're not talking about sterilizing the mask. We're talking about decontaminating them in this process. And so anything we can do to reinforce that, and that's why sometimes we use words loosely, but in this scenario, the words are very carefully chosen for that reason.
Yeah, and this just emphasizes the need for understanding the why behind why we do what we do. Because if we're just going through processes because that's what we've been told, when something happens that falls a little bit outside of the norm due to extenuating circumstances like we're in, it tends to just blow everybody's mind and go haywire because we just simply aren't thinking critically, like you said. And so I think this is a very important distinction that we have to talk about. And again, it just reinforces why we need that education to think about the whys behind these things.
That's right, Mike. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. As a reminder, you can help support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to this bonus episode of Beyond Clean.